So thank you very much, Bruce, and good morning, everyone. I'm very glad to be with you this morning to talk about big data and particularly about big geospatial data, because that's part of what you just mentioned, dealing with spatial temporal data and analysis, and the fact that a lot of people in various fields, what you described is exactly the same in many other fields, and people have difficulties or have limited knowledge of what they can do with technology sometimes, which is 25 or 30 years old, like GIS, for example. So there is a lot we can do, and it's a matter very often of having collaboration between people from various backgrounds. And hopefully this morning what I will present you will give you a good idea of that. Because I am not in agriculture. I have done a few projects with people in agriculture, but I have also worked with people in forestry, in environment, in public health a lot. I was a collaborative researcher with the World Health Organization for epidemiology. I have also worked mostly on transportation, and I can tell you that a lot of the issues, a lot of the problems are the same. There are various solutions adapted for each community, but we see the same concerns everywhere, and it's very interesting when you look at it from a geospatial IT specialist. So, you have heard a lot about big data. It's really a buzzword that is widespread today, and there is still a lot of hype about it. But if you look at the Gartner hype cycle, they already measure that the hype is going down. And it's normal. It's like that with every technology. We have a lot of expectations. We think we will do everything. It will be easy. It will be cheap and so on. But when we try things, then we discover that it was great, probably, but we don't achieve what we expected to. It's more costly than we thought about. There is less return on our investment and so on. And then after a while, you know, the hype goes down, and then people start really to understand what it does well, what it does not well, and how that integrates with the other technologies that they already have in their organization. That's the normal way that a technology is maturing. And big data is there right now. So we will talk about some definitions about big data. Then we'll talk about the big data technological ecosystem, and I will describe some of the implications, some challenges, and also certain benefits that can bring to your field. So big data really as a term, it really appeared in the mid-1990s in the scientific community, mostly in astronomy and genomics. But it became popular around 2007, 2008, you know, on the web, on marketing materials of private companies, you know, mostly software and hardware companies. And also you started to see some job postings requiring knowledge about big data. But really it was recognized in the overall IT community in 2010, when you would find definitions in Wikipedia, you would find that as a key element in the trends in Google search. You had the first time that term, you know, big data appearing in the Gartner hype cycle and so on. In fact, it really corresponds to that era where you have the convergence of low-cost technologies like this. Okay, which has built-in GPS and so on, and a camera and so on, and increase the data production, because we all produce data with our devices, but also all GPS-based technologies that you may already use in agriculture and agronomy, drones and aerial imagery, high-resolution satellite imagery, and so on. So really, all that is really making its way into our life, and big data technology and big data concepts are also making their way in our life, in our everyday life. So, as I just mentioned, the sources of data that we have today, it's really multiplying. You have all those, you know, smartphones, LiDAR data, you have the logs of web activities when you are surfing on your browser, social network data, tweets on Twitter, you know, radio frequency, ID tags in supply chain management applications, GoPro videos, data mashup, combining data from various sources on the web, data streams from sensor networks, Earth observation satellites data, intelligent transportation systems using GPS and communication technology in their vehicles and so on. And we even see now on the market, you can buy GPS and communication systems for your pets to put them on their collars and on the wheelchairs of your parents and so on. So it's really everywhere. So it really provides fine-grained data and timely data, very often in real time. And this also fits or corresponds to major trends in our society. A lot of smartphone apps use GPS positioning to deliver location-based services. The Internet of Things, the interoperability of systems, the open data movement, the provision of business intelligence applications in large and medium-sized organizations, cloud computing, smart cities, crowdsourcing, and all that is really, you know, coming together thanks to all those low-cost technologies, low-cost communication technologies, and low-cost location technologies. And big data is dealing with that. It's benefiting from that, and it is contributing to the advancement of all those trends. So, from our one report that we wrote for the government of Canada last year, we just wrote this, that there are millions of dumb objects which are becoming smart devices. Millions of people are becoming data generators. Cities are becoming smart, and so on and so on. So we are really starting a new data-centric period, a data-centric universe, which is on the rise. And that's something that you will find in many publications. Many scientists would agree about that. You know, hardware at its 20 to 30 year run. Then software at its 20 to 30 year period. And we are now at the beginning of the data era. And it is really shared by many scientists and visionaries. So that's what it looks today. We had this hardware era from the 50s to the 80s, the software era from the 80s to about 2010, I would say. And now we have started the data era. This is where we make most of our advancement in society. So let's see some examples, okay, about big data. For example, the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, the SDSS system, which started in 2000, they collected more data in the first few weeks than they did in the entire history of astronomy. Then, the large synoptic survey telescope that will start next year, they will collect in 5 days the same amount of data that they have that was collected by the SDSS in 10 years. That gives you an idea of how it increases. That's incredible. In physics, for example, in Geneva, in Switzerland, the Large Hadron Collider, they use 150 million sensors that deliver 40 million times data per second. But of all those data, only 100 collisions per second are kept. But that creates 200 petabytes of data per year. And without filtering, if they would keep all that, that would create 500 exabytes of data per day. In fact, it is 200 times higher than all the other sources of data combined in the world. That gives you an idea. Well, let's look at some fields which are closer to what you do in agriculture. For example, in forestry, the Global Forest Watch, which is an international program, and their goal is to combine near real-time satellite data, forest management maps, company concession maps, protected area maps, mobile technology, crowdsource the data, and underground network data as well. And they want to change the way that how they fight against global deforestation. And they want to do that by providing timely information on the state of the world's forest. Another example in healthcare, here in the U.S., the Premier system, which is the largest healthcare alliance in the country, well, they store very diversified data coming from 2,200 hospitals, 100,000 care facilities, and 400,000 physicians. Then, based on those data that they process, then they can give physicians unprecedented access to the best practices for given diseases, for certain types of patients, and also they can provide more information about patient care protocols and clinical outcomes. And they have estimated that they have saved with their system 92,000 lives while reducing the cost by $9 billion since 2008, simply by integrating those various types of data and processing them at a larger scale to see what are some major trends between what is given to the patients and the outcome on their health. So those are only a few examples. There are more examples like that. So you can also talk about big data based on their source, their movement, and their structure. For example, source. You have data generated by humans using their smartphones, social networks, tweets, and so on, and web surfing. And you have machine-generated data as well, using radio frequency, ID tags, surveillance cameras, satellite imagery, and so on. That's one way to distinguish the types of big data, human-generated and machine-generated. Then you can separate them based on movement. You have big data in motion, which are rapidly streaming high-volume data that must be harnessed and analyzed as soon as they arrive and are delivered to the users, when the user is, where they, when they want it, and how they want it. And on the other hand, you have big data at rest, data that can be put in a state in which meaningful search, analysis, and reporting may be conducted later on. So that's another way of distinguishing the types of big data. And then you can think of big data with relation to their structure. They can be highly structured, as we find in our legacy databases, for example, or they can be unstructured, like a tweet on Twitter, or like discussions on Facebook, for example. So they have no predefined data model. And you have also, in the, between the two extremes, semi-structured data, which are partly structured and partly unstructured. So the way we process them, it varies a lot. So very often when you think about big data, people will think about big data in motion, which are not structured, because this is where the challenge is. This is where most of the novelty is. But there is a lot of other types of big data that they don't talk more in publications and scientific conferences. And those are those more traditional big data at rest, which are structured and still highly useful. So when we think about big data in the literature and in the community, we use three characteristics to define them. We call that the three V's: the volume, the velocity, and the variety of data. So big data, according to Gartner, are defined as high volume, high velocity, and or high variety information assets that require new forms of processing to enable enhanced decision-making, insight, discovery, and process optimization. And there are three key ingredients to the success of a big data project. And those three aspects are very important. If you fail to do one of them properly, you will have a big problem. So it's profiling, it's analytics, and governance. Those are the three success factors of big data. So let's see what all those terms mean in fact. So data volume, it's the amount of data to be handled. So when we talk about big data, it's not only data volume. We have always had big data. You know, with I have been dealing with satellite imagery, aerial photographs, and so on for more than 30 years now. And those are big data. They have always been considered as big data set. So just look at what big data is today, because that notion of big data changes over time. What was big data yesterday is not big data today. But today we see, for example, on Twitter you have 146 billion tweets per year. On Facebook, 3 billion likes and comments per day. On Google, 2 trillion searches per year. At Walmart, 2.5 petabytes of data every hour. That's a lot of data. And globally, we produce 35 billion terabytes of data. We will produce that by 2020. That's a lot. 90% of that data is less than 2 years old, and 98% of the data is digital. So, almost ready to be processed. Now, let's talk about velocity. Velocity is the rate at which the data is collected and the time frame in which data must be processed, analyzed, and acted upon. So, you have a spectrum here from batch integration and loading of data at predetermined interval on one side and real-time streaming of data at the other side, the other end. So, it's a spectrum there, depending upon the needs of the organization and for the application. Here is a very good example of what big data can do. Google, they developed a model. It's 2 or 3 years ago when there was the H1N1 virus spread. So they developed a model based on 3 billion search queries to predict that H1N1 virus spread. And with their model, they could predict in near real time the worldwide spread of a flu virus at the state level. Well, that was much more timely and useful than the traditional reporting method, which is based on the physician's offices, which results in a 2-week lag to provide relevant data to the World Health Organization. So, just by analyzing what people were looking for on the web, they figured out that in many places, physicians, doctors were asking about H1N1. And when there was a certain amount of queries built with H1N1, they considered that there was a cluster in this area and probably that there was an epidemia starting there. 2 weeks before the World Health Organization could do it. That's interesting. Okay, there's a lot of variety of data that also we analyze with big data. So it's a number of different data sources. Some of them are automated, like using heat sensors, for example. Many of them are in a format that is ready for analysis, but a lot of them are not ready for analysis. A lot of them are generated without a specific goal. For example, when they look at what people talk about on tweets, in Twitter. A lot of those data are not structured, and they capture everything. A lot of that is not useful. And it may be messy and noisy, obviously. 80% of the world data is not structured. So you see the challenge there. But it's also exciting that maybe we can have something useful out of that. And the amount of unstructured data is growing 15 times faster than structured data. So what do we do with that? Well, we need to do good data profiling. This is why it is so important. This is why this is the first success key factor. It's the process of analyzing those incoming data to find problems of reliability, to clean the data, and to filter the data that may have value. You may decide to keep all those data, or you may decide to filter most of them based on your needs and what you want to analyze and your technological capabilities. It's really the first phase of data integration projects, and this is why there are many existing data profiling tools which already were there for geospatial business intelligence projects, for example, or data warehousing projects, and those technologies being adapted for the new big data technology as well, especially for the high velocity and high variety characteristics of big data. So once we have filtered those data, we want to analyze them. So that's called data analytics. It's not new. Data analytics already existed. It's the science of examining large amounts of data to uncover hidden patterns, unknown correlations, trends, weaknesses, new segmentations of data, forecast models, predictive behaviors, and any other useful pattern like that. So the science behind data analytics, as you can imagine, it's either exploratory data analysis or confirmatory data analysis. So when we talk about big data analysis, it really focuses on sorting useful insights and predictive analysis in real time from the rapidly increasing volume of new heterogeneous data sets. That's quite a challenge. And now, big data governance. What do we do with those data? What do we do with the results of those analyses? Who has the right to use that? Who can disseminate the results? And what happens if there is a problem, there are impact, negative impacts, and there are damages, and somebody is suing us? What happens? That kind of thing. It's data governance. It's the quality control framework that an organization puts into place to add rigor, security, and discipline to their process of managing and using big data. It reduces the risk of data misuse, and it increases the trust of the users and of the company providing the services. So there already exist data governance policies within some organizations, but they have to extend it with big data technology. Now about the technological ecosystems, who are the key players there? Well, as you can imagine, the Facebook and Google and Twitter and Amazon of that world are the big players. And also some scientific labs, the retail market, financial services, banking accounts, telecom companies, healthcare services, insurance companies, they are the big players right now. But there is a big difference between those two groups. The first group is using us, citizens, as their products. In fact, they are using what we do, what we like, where we go, and they analyze everything because of this and our web browser. We are the product. They analyze the data that we produce, they profile that, and they sell that for publicity, mostly. So analytics is a big business for them because they have a lot of liberty to leverage the data because the laws and the regulations are not yet there to tell them what they can do and what they cannot do. It's not that highly efficient. So that's why citizens are very concerned about privacy and inappropriate usages of the data. On the other hand, when you think about the retail market, financial services, healthcare, and so on, insurances, those are highly regulated communities, especially with regards to privacy of data. And they have more limited leveraging possibilities with big data. But in spite of that, they invest a lot in big data technologies. So you have, I would say, two types of big data technology. There is the core data, the core big data technology, which was developed especially for big data. And you have software from established companies who are being big data enabled, and which does, they do a lot of nice things too. The major moves in big data with regards to what was going on before is really to evolve into real-time data analysis, okay? And most of the people are using Hadoop 2.0 ecosystem and the Microsoft Reef framework to deal with that. It really helps to deal with the three V's of big data. And also there is a lot of usage of in-memory databases and in-memory analytics for large workloads. So those are the main categories of technologies for big data. And in your field, like in many fields, we are talking more about big geospatial data, because geospatial data provides the position, the shape, the orientation, and the size of objects and phenomena. It provides much more powerful analysis, a better integration of data that were unlinked before, but using space and time. Even if there is no other common data between the two data sets, you can link them. And the value of data explodes when it can be linked with other data. This is why location and time data are so important. And also, big geospatial technology and big geospatial data can provide enriched data visualization in 2D, 3D, and 4D, which provides new insights that you would not find in traditional tables and charts. So, agronomy and agricultural data, it is typically spatially referenced. You use a lot of geographical information systems based on maps, spatial databases, and spatial analysis. You use satellite imagery, aerial photographs, GPS-based technology in the field, and you deal with multiple map scales and multiple epochs when you want to do comparisons and understand the evolution of a phenomenon and so on. So you are really dealing with that type of data. So that's why it creates a lot of activities for you, a lot of opportunities, because your activities are taking place somewhere. You already use geospatial information technology. And in fact, in your field, from what I saw in my two or three projects I did in agronomy and agriculture and from other discussions I had, like yesterday night, for example, you have an integration challenge, a data integration challenge, like in many, many fields, okay, related to natural resources. So you have to integrate spatially and temporally fine-grained data. You have to integrate various scales of analysis from the subfield to the world, to integrate past data with real-time data and predictive data. You have to integrate data from various sources using various measurement technologies and made using various or diverse practices, various contexts, and various topographies, and so on. So modern ag, I would say, has to deal, or is already dealing with high volumes, high variety, and high velocity of data. So big data, the big geospatial data world or universe is offering very interesting opportunities for improvement in your field. So from the technology point of view, the implications are that you have traditional geospatial technology that you already use, but it's not really adequate for interactive big data analytics and geovisualization. On the other hand, there is location-aware core big data technology that you could buy, but it is not adequate to fully exploit the geospatial data, and you would be frustrated with several solutions. And you have big data-enabled established technologies which combine the strengths and the weaknesses of location-aware core big data and traditional geospatial technology. So there is no one-size-fits-all solution. Okay? So every case is unique and depending upon the needs of the organization, the types of data they want to use, the types of analytics they want to use, then there is a selection to make to use the technology that would fit the best, within the technological ecosystem of that organization. There is an application about quality also. The power of big data lies in the combination analytics of data sets, which are collected very often independently, and we want to integrate them. And so it really increases the potential of having data inconsistencies. Okay, and it is already happening at a scale that we have never seen before because of the diversity of measuring instruments and the context and so on. So there is a lot of filtering, a lot of profiling needed to do quality analysis of those data. There was this citation that I liked a lot that I wanted to put in my presentation. It says that analysis can and does provide insights, creating new agronomic knowledge that allows growers and advisors to understand relationships that were impossible to see before. Yet, big data analytics is not the crystal ball that removes local context. Rather, the power of big data analytics is handing the crystal ball to advisors that have the local context. So that does not remove common sense, even if your big data application says, well, there is this big number, that number there, and because there is a correlation between the two, this is a cause-effect relationship. Don't believe that automatically. And then there are some legal issues, and that's the biggest challenge. There are privacy examples, like who can access my farm data? Can my competitors access it? Are they pooled or compared with other farm data? Can they be used to restrict my access to insurances or government programs? And then questions like, who owns the data? Is there a license to restrict unwanted usages of my data? What happens if I withdraw from the system? Do I know what they do with my data? Am I compensated if they make money with that? That kind of questions are legitimate questions. And then there are security issues against piracy, identity theft, and industrial spying. There are some liability issues in case of faulty data and faulty analytics. Who will pay for the damages? There are laws that exist, but they must be extended and updated. There is a recent report from the United Nations that says consumer protection and marketing laws and policies will need to evolve to enable the citizen to enjoy appropriate protections. And the issue of liability for the quality and accuracy of data is likely to grow. Data ownership issues will evolve in challenging ways in the coming years, and the growth in the amount of data, the number of actors in the data creation processes, and the interconnectivity of these parties can pose greater challenges regarding knowledge of data ownership and liability. So that's part of the United Nations report. So there is a lot of adaptation to do with regards to the way we analyze the data. So we have to don't go into the mantra of believe the numbers. Always be vigilant about the interpretation of those numbers. So modern agriculture and agronomy truly deals with high volumes of data, high variety of data, and high velocity of data. So this is a world of big geospatial data. The implications are, and it is exciting, you know, it provides more evidence-based analysis, more analytical capabilities, especially for real-time analysis, and more integrated knowledge. So it has the potential to provide that. If we use that with a strong knowledge of the nature of data and with vigilance. So that will bring really a new world of capabilities. And it is central to have successful process, to have efficient profiling, value-added analytics, so doing analytics that will help us to have a good return on our investment on big data, and also good data governance. So those really are the key issues here. So thank you very much.
So don't go away, Yvonne. We have time for a question or two from the audience here. And I have a list of seven here if you don't have any questions. So go ahead. I saw a lot of wheels turning out there. Any questions for Yvonne?
There's one here in front.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't see you there.
I hope not to be here myself 20 years from now. I hope to be retired. But I often tell my students it's going to be really interesting to know where this area is 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Where are we going to be 20 years from now?
That was one of my questions. So good. Outstanding.
Okay, the way it sits in 20 years from now, that we will have matured about this technology as we have done with large databases and geographic information system and so on. So the technology will not be the challenge. It will be how we govern our data. It is a natural evolution of every field. You know, we start with the excitement of a new product, new capabilities, and then those capabilities are put in the hands of everyone. And then there is a lot of benefits to that, and there are a few incidents or accidents. And then, if there are many of them, then society reacts with court decisions, new laws, new regulation, and so on. And then after a while, 2-3 decades, it becomes mature because the technology is not the problem. The practices have become more standard, and the society has reacted to manage what can be done with respect to the rights of people, to the rights of companies, and to the rights of the nation. So that's where I see it. That new data era in 20 years from now will be mature, and it will not be as a problem as it is today when we think about governance and all those legal issues and so on. So it will be fun.
So I think we'll move on.